This is the Uplink Marketing Podcast. My name is Evan Chasteen, host of this podcast, which is becoming a place where I speak with other agency owners and employees about marketing, business, and technology. Today's guest is Lane McCandless. Lane is the executive director of Robin's Nest Media and is known as chief storyteller in the marketing industry. He's a visionary and loves to celebrate other people's businesses and passions through the lens of marketing. With a degree in public relations and social media, he is pioneering digital marketing in Branson, Missouri. Outside of his 9-to-5, Lane is a communicator in evangelism and leadership in the United States. On a typical evening, you can find him spending time with his wife, Aspen Lee, sitting around a bonfire or playing music. Let's dive right in. Lane, welcome to the Uplink Marketing Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Evan. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So today's topic is culture and work-life balance. We've got a little bit to talk about there. I've got some questions prepared. You've looked through some of the questions, and we may rabbit trail off those as well. I think it'd be fun to start with the work-life balance and then kind of figure out how that intersects with culture, particularly our culture, but then maybe even explore different cultures and how they interact with work-life balance. That may not even be on the questions I sent you, but just came to mind.
Absolutely.
Let's get on the same page with our definitions. How do you define work? How do you define life? How do you define balance? And then throw them all together one after the other. How do you define work-life balance?
That's awesome. I love that. I love that you're even asking that question, because I think that it's something that's thrown around. It's really popular in the workplace. Like, I remember going to interviews at jobs even leading up to this one. And something that I feel like every company has claimed at some point is like, we really push a work-life balance. And it's like, do you, you know? So I love the idea of taking a step back. But to me, work is a passion to provide or make a difference in an industry. And so I hope that work is something that's enjoyable for someone. I was listening to a podcast this morning, actually, on my way to work. And it really just, he kind of said it plain and simple. He's like, if you're working for the weekends and you're working to be able to take that 2-week vacation in the summer with your family, and that's all you're working for, then you need another job. And so I think a lot of times work has like a negative connotation to it. But especially me being a man of faith, first of all, it's like, yeah, work is something that I should enjoy doing and contributing to society and the economy and making a difference. So practically for me, that looks like marketing, communication, and using those skill sets to make a difference in my direct community. So that's how I would define work. And then life for me is, I want to be successful in work, but more importantly than work, what life to me is being able to be present with my wife whenever I come home and being intentional with my family and those relationships and how that we're in different seasons of our life. And then being intentional with friends and really taking accountability seriously. And so work is able to provide an outlet for me to do life with people. And that's what I really appreciate about it. The reason that balance is important between those is because balance is really important in whatever you do in life. And so for me, if I'm working too much, then unfortunately my wife and my friends and my family and my hobbies, they kind of fall to the wayside. But if I only concentrate on those, then I can't honestly say that I'm doing my due diligence of contributing to the success of the community or the business or the economy. So that's my personal definition. I know a lot of people have different viewpoints on that though.
Yeah. So if you were to draw a Venn diagram, like with work and life, that in my mind, I was trying to create one that's balanced, you know, like there's equal overlap between work and life. And maybe that would be how somebody would put a work-life balance. But then as I started thinking about it more, life seems to be the bigger circle, and then work seems to be the circle that fits within it, along with all of these other things. So balance is kind of even a funny word to use between the two. And I would guess even that you have friends at work and that you talk to your wife about work. So is there like do you have any clear-cut lines between the two, or is it a lot of gray area for you and just how you go through your life, particularly because you have the opportunity to do things that you like and that you enjoy. And I don't think that's always the case for everybody. But is it clear lines the way you structure things, or is it like a bunch of gray area?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking about that as well as I'm like kind of prepping for this and thinking about it. I'm like, even using the word balance sets people up for failure. Like, because you just think of it as a teeter-totter. Like, sometimes I'm good at work-life balance, sometimes I'm not. Like, and I don't even like looking at it like that. For me, it really is like life is this all-encompassing thing. And then work is one of those compartments that fall within into life. So to answer your question, I think there's clear-cut lines on certain things. But then there's a gray area, and I've like learned to be okay with the gray area, which wasn't okay with me at first. But where I have clear-cut lines is like priorities. And so my relationship with my wife will always be a priority to me. My relationship with God will always be a priority to me. And my relationship, hopefully to show honor to my boss, will always be a priority. But if those are all three on the same line, you realize really quickly that you don't have priorities. You just have, those are all on the same playing field. And so you kind of have to make the tough decision. And I think a lot of employers aren't able to appreciate this, but I feel like if I make the priority that my wife comes before work, then I'm actually a better worker. And I know that that doesn't make sense to the general public. But whenever you start to think about it, if I'm not winning at home, then there's no way I'm going to be winning at work. And so some of those direct lines for me look like maybe not taking business calls after hours, unless it's an emergency. And I've done not to pat myself on the back, but I've also taken the steps necessary to equip my team to know if something's an emergency or if it can wait till tomorrow. Yeah. And so I know if I'm getting a call after hours that the sky is falling, I need to take this. But they've also done a good job of respecting, like, if I'm at home, then I'm enjoying an evening with my wife and it can wait till tomorrow. But again, just to go back to that line, like if I'm not winning at home, then I'm definitely not winning at work. And so that's why direct and clear lines are really necessary. However, I also wouldn't think it would be helpful. Here's where the gray area comes in. I also don't think it'd be helpful if at 5 o'clock, I shut my brain off from work. I go home and I don't ever talk to my wife about my day. I don't ever discuss work with my friends. And I don't, because you want to have a sense of joy and fulfillment in the work that you do. And you should want to talk about it, especially in our world with marketing. Like, dude, we're telling stories. And how bad would it be to be so constricted outside of business hours to be like, oh, I can't talk about what I do. I can't talk about the stories. And there's so many times, and I hope this doesn't end, but there's so many times that I come home and I'm just like so passionate about a project I'm working on that I can't wait to share it with people. And that's where the gray area comes in, because I wouldn't want to have such a hard line that I'm not able to intersect those experiences in my life.
Yeah. And you used the line a couple times there. If I'm not winning at home, then I'm not going to be winning at work. I think there's a little bit of truth in the flip of that as well. If you're not winning at work, it's going to be hard to be winning at home, because there's responsibility, there's family, there's contributing to society, all these things that I would classify as work, things that you're doing, a trade of a skill for let's just say money, a trade of a skill for money. So if you're not winning at home, it's going to be hard to win at work. If you're not winning at work, it's going to be hard to win at home. And if you're not winning either place, then life's probably like at a fairly difficult spot, which I think a lot of people end up there for one reason or another. And that can be pretty difficult. So if we were to strike balance from the phrase, so instead of work-life balance, what's a better way to put that?
I think it's just like more of your perspective on life. And I like using the word like compartmentalize. And it goes back to, I know I'm stepping into a different thing here, but that's okay. Bear with me. Yes. But like, that's why I also don't like saying like God is my number one priority. It's like, no, God is everything in my life. And then things fall beneath that. And so working with that same structure, it's like, no, dude, this is life. Like, we are living life. You get one shot at it. So these compartments that fall into it of like family and hobbies and work is one of those compartments. And just structure it in a healthy way. And so rather than like trying to find balance, just make sure it's healthy. I'm constantly doing audits of myself, and not like just work audits, but like, where's my like physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, how full are those tanks in these different compartments? And that's a good check for me. Cause if they're lacking in a certain area, I can go to that compartment and say, maybe we need to change things here. Maybe I need to restructure. Maybe I need to reroute. But I remember, like, I remember being like 10 years old and talking to this guy at my church who made a lot of money. He was super successful and he hated his job, like hated it. I kind of knew him as like the grumpy old man, like in the back of the congregation, just because like, I remember him always talking about how much, like, he was almost arrogant in a bad way, like how much he made. But then he was so grumpy because he worked in a job for 30 years that he hated. And I was just like, I don't want that to be me. Like, I really don't want that to be my my view on life and my view on work. So
yeah, it reminds me, I went on this silent retreat that was just for men in here in Georgia. It's like up in the North Georgia mountains, and it's meant to be a time to unplug, kind of refresh. You know, they encourage you to turn off your technology and spend some time in silence and prayer and solitude. And I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, which means that silence and solitude are a path to transformation. And so it was a transformational experience for me, and I've carried those practices into my life. And when I start feeling stress, I move into like this one perfectionist mode, and it's a good trigger to be like, oh, just, you know, spend some time meditating, like pull up Headspace and sit for 20 minutes, just focusing on your breath. And it's become a really amazing practice for me. But one of the things I also learned from this trip was I think I was one of 220 somethings in the room, and the rest of these men sound similar to this guy from your church. You didn't say his age, but I kind of just pictured one of these men in the church who had done well in their life, worked the last 3 decades to build up their wealth and their what would you call it, reputation. Like, those are the two things that were most important to them. But in the process, a lot of them realized, maybe on this trip, or maybe they were accepting it, or realizing they needed to do something about it, that in the process of building up their wealth and reputation, they had let family or these other aspects of life take a backseat on this priority list that you're kind of talking about. And so I watched man after man stand up, teary-eyed, some of them bawling, saying they missed it. But they had accomplished everything that culture had told us was important, which is you build up your wealth and you build up your reputation. Mm-hmm. And that has been one of, if I'm trying to decide between work and life ever, if I'm defining life as not, maybe not the big Venn diagram circle, I think of maybe the balance more of like my immediate family, my wife and my 2 kids. Mm-hmm. And then maybe lower on that list would be the 2 dogs, but that would be like my immediate like thing I'm trying to balance right now and figure out how to do work that adds value to their life, but also be there with them so that can add value to their life.
Yeah.
And I just think of these guys standing up after 30 years of choosing one over the other and saying they missed it. And it's been a really nice kind of guiding principle that does seem countercultural in a way. Mm-hmm. So if we can here, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about culture and maybe how this came to be, or if this is the same everywhere. And again, let's start with defining culture. How do you define culture?
Yeah. Dude, to me, culture is everything. And that's a broad definition. But what I mean is, culture matters most in an organization, in my opinion, because it's what you want people to perceive about your organization. But it's also the characteristics, the qualities, the attributes that the people on your team are telling. And so a lot of times people are like, well, I'm just going to let culture create itself. And I know I'm probably moving ahead here a little bit, but a lot of times people are like, I'm just going to let that develop naturally because they feel like, oh, people need to express themselves. But if you don't define culture for your employees, they'll define it for you. And that can be a detrimental thing to your organization. So culture is everything. And even more so than that, being intentional about your culture is everything on the front end. But just to, if I can take a step back to, I will say that like the work-life balance and culture, I don't know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, but I also think it's kind of a generational struggle. And what I mean by that is like, I look at my my parents and grandparents' generation, and they put such an high emphasis on being able to provide that like they missed out on their kids growing up to a certain extent. And I think that that's, again, very stereotypical, but I think it also has some truth to it. I think that's caused our generation or like whenever you think of Gen Z or even millennials, I think it's caused them to have the opposite. And while I have learned to appreciate that we want to experience all life has to offer, I think there's a lack of appreciation for how the economic growth and what the health looks like for our economy. And so I kind of sit in that weight of like, maybe there is a balance, maybe balance is a right word occasionally, but it's just like, maybe they were so far on this spectrum and then the new generation so far over here, like what if there's this, the grass is greener right in the middle. But that's just been something I've been able to notice. And so I guess that's not necessarily culturally, but it's more like a generational tie that I've been able to kind of identify within the work life struggle.
Yeah. And it seems generations have different cultures, just like different regions have different cultures, or different ethnicities have different cultures. There are things that are norms. There are things that are abnormal, that are acceptable, that are unacceptable. And they kind of clash in this, particularly in the US, which is a nation that was founded and attracted immigrants to build this country for so long. So we've got this, all of these cultures melding together to create, I think like you were saying, to create one culture. Like culture is everything, but then there's all these subcategories of it. You said one thing that I wanted to ask a few more questions on, related to if you don't create culture, your employees will, and that can be detrimental. So I'm working through what that looks like with Uplink right now. So selfishly, I'm just going to use this time to ask you, how do you intentionally create culture that your employees also align with? What does that look like? Where, and is there ever room for the employees to create the culture? And can that even be an intentional aspect of the company creating the culture? What does that look like? What does it look like at Robin's Nest Media? How have you guys approached this?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So we are super intentional about culture. We are just over a year old, so we're a year and like 3 months old. But we knew that that culture was important early on. And so what we did is we had core values, and that's nothing out of the ordinary. Like I think you could look at almost any business and they're like, yeah, I have a mission statement, a vision statement, and core values. The difference is that if I walk in and I ask someone in there, hey, can you tell me what your core values are? The employee is going to go, let me get a manager. And so it's like really funny because it seems like only like the higher ups, like the admin of the offices, tend to know those core values. And you hear about it on work training day, and that's the last time you hear about it. Right. We were like, no way. Like we're going to constantly talk about our core values. And so at Robin's Nest, we have 5 core values. So the first one is always do the right thing. So we're going to continually be seeking out. That means always doing the right thing, even from an integrist standpoint within the business. We're always going to do the right thing. The next one is we're going to do everything with excellence. So we love working with the people who have a high level of excellence, because that's also what we hold ourselves to. So a lot of our clients that we brought on, being a 1-year agency, I think other agencies would have been like, I can't believe you went after them. Like, I can't believe, because of how high their level of excellence was. And, how little room there was for fault. But we just knew if we work with those type of people, we're going to get to that standard very quickly. So we work with a high level of excellence. The next thing is educate. And so that's a twofold one. So we're going to educate ourselves, because we need to constantly be developing ourselves and our skill sets and our relationships. Something I ask our team every week is, I say, how'd you get better this week? And I'm not looking for them to say something work related. I want to know what book they're reading, what podcast they're listening, how they're investing. But we also want to educate our clients. And so there's a lot of, especially just being in Branson, I'll just admit, like Branson's pretty behind when it comes to marketing and communication. So there's a lot of things that, like mom and pop shops, which we love dearly, but they're outdated and their marketing is not where it needs to be. So it's that battle of like having an honest conversation with them and educating them that, like, I know you've been sold, you know, you've been told that for $50 you can get however many leads and all of this stuff. And it's taking the time to sit down with them, knowing that they're probably not going to go with you because you're not quite seeing eye to eye, and maybe you're not even the right fit for them, but still spending the time to like walk them through that process. The fourth one is to serve well. So that means it's kind of that mentality that like, nobody can say that's not my job. We're going to serve each other really well. We're also going to serve the community really well. And then the last one's to have fun. And our office does a lot of that. I don't think a marketing company, I don't think I've met a marketing company so far that doesn't have fun. Like we have a good time. We have a frisbee golf, like disc golf. We have those set up around our office. And so nice. If we ever are walking through the office, we'll make sure to play a little bit of that. But those are the core values. And the thing I will say about that, just again, to kind of like say why it's different at R&M, is you can ask our intern, you can ask our project manager, you can ask our videographer, photographer, you can ask me, you can ask our front desk person. They all know the core values and they all know them in order because we constantly talk about them, and we don't just talk about them, we put them into action. So
that's awesome. That is a great way to do that. So thanks for sharing. So I'm going to try to tie this back into our culture conversation. Does culture value that? So outside of your company culture, do you choose things that are intentionally valued by the culture around you? Or I think sometimes there's also value in doing things that are counterculture or making statements that sometimes other people are going to disagree with. Yeah. And is that a good move, bad move? Is it more about just speaking from what you believe in and talking about things you believe in? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first part of that answer would be kind of what you were asking last time. I think it would be a missed opportunity if you don't let the employees contribute to the culture. And so as we were like forming that, that's like a working definition for us. Like all of those are working definitions. If someone on the team came up and said, hey, rather than using the word educate, what if we use this? And like, as long as we can make it make sense, I'm not opposed to changing that.
Yeah.
Because I want them to be contributors. And so I think with culture, where it's missed out a lot is, yeah, it's like the three main admins sitting in a room, they come up and they say, these are what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. Yes, you need like the boldness of that leadership, but you also need the humility. Like I think of the book, Hungry, Humble, Smart, where it's talking about, I can't remember what book that is, but ideal team player maybe. And I think it was Patrick Lencioni, but I think that whenever you empower your team to inspire culture, that's when you hit a home run. And so I want to create a culture in the office to where they can implement, they can dream, they can say things that then become precedents for how we operate moving forward. But yeah, I think to expand on what you just asked, like we are willing to say things that other people aren't, and we're willing to be the leading marketing agency. And we want to be innovative in the Branson area by doing things that is a little bit countercultural. So it's not hard to stand out in business. Like a lot of people think it is. And it's like, no, just be excellent at it. Like we wanted to just look, Donald Miller does a great job in all of his like story brand stuff of just like, basically businesses are just a solution to a problem. And so that's why R&M even exists in the first place. Is like, I live in Branson, I'm passionate about marketing, and the marketing in Branson was not good. And so I'm like, I'll come up with a solution to that. And so that would be my perspective on it. But especially whenever people disagree with you, like even from personal experience, like you've got to be willing to really combat what you believe in. And hopefully if you're a part of a business, it's because you believe in believe in your product, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, totally. Okay, I'm going to shift again before we get to the last question of why marketing is important. Mm-hmm. This one is not one that I sent you ahead of time.
Good.
It's just, I'm curious. I said I was a 7 on the Enneagram earlier, and I think I heard you say me too.
Yeah.
I want to hear about your experience being a 7 on the Enneagram. particularly in your role? We have similar roles right now. So how does it show up in healthy ways? How does it show up in unhealthy ways? What have you learned? What can I learn from you being a 7 on the Enneagram? And then before you answer that, what is your wife on the Enneagram?
That's awesome. Okay. So my wife is a 3-2.
Okay.
So she's definitely like that achiever mentality, very task goal oriented. But like she has such a like loving and compassionate heart too. And so she's so service oriented, which I look at her Enneagram, like the 3-2, and I'm like, oh, what a good combo. Like that's
it really awesome. Is. Yes.
Awesome. So I'm very blessed to have her in my life. She's phenomenal. And she works so hard because of that achiever in her, but then she works with such a full heart because the 2 and so loving. So I really appreciate that about my wife. And then I am a 7 wing 8. And so I am a Mr. Enthusiast who's passionate about just about everything. I have a new, like you can see, I have a new hobby like every other week, and I get 2 chapters into a book and then dive into another one. And then I start a podcast really faithfully. And then I'm into another one, and I'm currently watching 4 shows on Netflix and I haven't finished any of them. but that's, I'm a 7 wing 8. So okay. I also have that, that leadership mentality of, I'm willing to step up and lead. And I'm even a younger guy in the organization, but, I love to lead teams. I love to inspire people. And so the strengths of that is like the confidence, the visionary, like I'm just a natural visionary of like, here's where I want to be. And then anything's attainable. I don't know if you're familiar with the 5 voices, but on that, I'm a connector, creative pioneer. And so, I love like connections and figuring out like how, this person might seem unattainable or this client might seem unattainable, but I know this person who knows this person who knows this person, and then I can get to them. Like those are the things that like, that's where my skill set and strategy, I love that stuff. Weaknesses is focus and being organized. And I know that about myself. So it's important to know that about yourself, because then I have to hire people that are good in those areas, because I know I don't want things to fall through the cracks and stuff like that. So I make sure that the team isn't all like-minded like me, because I can learn to appreciate the differences. As I know that for them, it's probably frustrating when things aren't organized and when I lose focus. And so
is Enneagram your go-to assessment for your team? What assessments do you use to know whether somebody's organized or not on your team?
Yeah, so we do 2 tests. So we do Enneagram. So I have all of my employees on the Enneagram and where they fall. And then we do the 5 voices, which is, it's Giant TV. That's the resource.
Okay.
Giant.tv. And then those categories, it's connector, creator, pioneer, guardian, and nurturer. Those are the 5.
Cool.
But it's interesting to like see how that comes up. And so certain people in the office, you just like learn that they're very like mild mannered and they don't like conflict. And then there's some that are like, hey, these are the rules and we're sticking to them. And then there's me who like walks in and is like, let's do something crazy today. Like that's why I love being a part of an agency, is like there's so many different personality types. And like just full transparency, like some days you walk in and when we're all operating at our highest capacity and fully into those Enneagram numbers and we're fully living into those, it's awesome because of how creative and innovative and productive we are.
Yep. But
then like the weakness, dude, if there's 1 or 2 of us like working in our weakness, it's just crazy how much it changes the dynamic of the office and how sluggish and just like without knowing, like your attitude can get so sad and just so like focused and derogatory. And so you have to be really intentional about keeping yourself in check. That's why I'm constantly auditing myself, like I said earlier.
Yep. Love it. That's helpful information for me. So thanks for allowing me just ask questions that I'm curious about.
Are you a 7-8 or a 7-6?
I currently identify most with 7-8. Yeah. And I maybe just as a 7, I don't like committing to that.
Yeah. I love that.
It's hard for me to commit to. I can commit to a 7 because there are some very glaring truths as I read through and as I've engaged with that over the last couple of years that put me in that category. One being selling our cars, quitting our jobs and buying an RV and traveling around the country. Like whenever people are like, oh yeah, your number is fairly obvious. But yeah, there are some other things just, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to ask a question on that because whenever the very first time we met Evan, like I remember you told me that story and I was like, dude, I'll do it with you. And like, I went home and I told my wife that evening, I'm like, I think I met my friend and he lives in Atlanta and I've only talked to him once. That's such a Seven thing to do because my wife calls like two people in her life friends and she's very specific.
Yes.
About that.
Yes. That's hilarious.
I call pretty much anybody and everybody. I'm like, oh yeah, like Evan, you're my friend. I've talked to you like four times, you know, but
yes.
That's just, I love it. So I knew, I figured you were, but I wasn't sure. But I was going to, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So as a seven, I've noticed like the weaknesses of like commitment, like to like tedious tasks in the office, for me, but it's weird because, like just to be transparent, like in high school and even in college, I had a hard time like committing to just about anything. But then like relationships, when I met my wife, like that is the one thing that I've just been like, oh, I'm able to fully jump in. And I think I can attribute that to like also a seven has this sense of like belonging and they like they love whenever things work together really well. And so with my wife, I'm just like, oh yeah, I have no problem committing to that. So I always find this weird balance of like, if only I can master what happened there with everything else in life, like that would be so good. But I was just curious what your take was on that.
On commitment specifically?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that I have any well-developed thoughts on commitment. I'm not great at it. even work, I'm like, is this the right thing? And I ask myself that way too often. I should be like committed to my work. And like, I'm committed to my wife and my kids. And other than that, just about everything else, like I grew up with a dad who was an entrepreneur and just about anything was for sale. It's like, mm-hmm. if somebody, you know, has the right price, like they want my car. Yeah, sure. Like you want anything, which also seems like an environment that a seven would thrive in. And I've kind of adopted that. It's like, yeah, well, I'm not committed to my car, my house, you know, whatever it is. And my wife has really helped me in that area. And more so just in with personal things in life, not so much with things at work. So I'm still trying to figure that out, man. Tedious tasks are tough. School was tough, other than the people, like everybody was my friend at school, but yeah. I didn't like school, like the work of it. But then it also, there was like a natural, it came somewhat natural to me too. Mm-hmm. So I didn't study. I've thrived off of, winging it for a long time. And so once you get to your 30s and you're trying to commit to things in life so mm-hmm. that you can actually do something of value, I think it takes some sort of commitment to do something mm-hmm. of value.
Yeah.
It becomes a little bit more of a challenge and it's more real. So only recently has it started to come up more, and I have started several things that I've not stuck with, and Uplink Marketing is the only one. Mm-hmm. that I've really stuck with. And anytime I question whether I'm going to stick with it or not, I tell myself I have to, because that's the only way I'm going to do something of value or contribute to society is like, no, stick with something. Don't just head out whenever things get hard, which is also a tendency, like the fear of pain, particularly emotional pain, mm-hmm. Which if something fails, that's a big emotional pain. So, anyways, I'm committing to things in a new way in my life and I'm learning from it. And are you familiar with the hero's journey?
I'm not, no.
Okay. So Joseph Campbell wrote a book called The Hero with 1,000 Faces. Okay. He's no longer around. He was a professor at Sarah Lawrence College, I think in like the 70s and 80s. And he was good friends with George Lucas and kind of provided the outline, the structure for the storyline of Star Wars and pulled it from mythology and religion. So we find all of these storylines that anything that's captivating, essentially, you can attribute it back to the hero's journey at some point. Donald Miller uses it a lot with the hero and the guide.
Hero on a mission. Okay.
That's all Joseph Campbell. He just put it in a marketing context. So he's pulling that language even from Joseph Campbell in the hero's journey. But Joseph Campbell, a phrase I stick with a lot is, the answers you seek are in the cave you fear to enter.
That's good.
Entering the cave that I fear to enter takes commitment. Mm-hmm. So that's what encourages me to stay committed to things these days, is finding what I'm fearful of and committing to enter that cave and going on that journey. And it's a cyclical journey. You go in that cave, you die, you resurrect, you're transformed, and there's life. We're all on this continual cycle of life, death, resurrection. Mm-hmm. And it's a really beautiful thing. So to get to death, I hold death at an arm's length, and I'm learning to embrace death. Which would be my journey of committing to something feels a lot like death, or my journey of doing a tedious task feels a lot like death. And that's kind of the journey I feel like I'm on. Good question. Thanks for asking.
I can relate to that. Yeah. I was going to say, I just want to learn from you. That's, you have a really good, really good perspective on that. I appreciate that. So
yeah,
I can also identify with the, if I want to sell my truck, I sell my truck. I sold my truck 2 days ago, just because of the market right now. It's like, I'll drive whatever. I don't really care.
So. Right. Yeah. I've considered selling my truck several times because it's worth more money than it was a year ago somehow. And it's a year older with 10,000 more miles on it.
Yep. That's how I was like, I pretty much just got paid to drive this truck for a few years. I'm like, my wife's like, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, I don't care.
That's awesome. Yep. Love it. Okay. So the last question on every podcast, is there anything you wanted to speak to before we get to that? I think I skipped around on some of the questions. Don't know if we hit everything you wanted to talk about.
I'm good, man. We can jump to that question.
Why is marketing important?
I love that question. Marketing is important because to me, the ultimate job of marketing is to tell stories, and not just stories, but stories that inspire, stories that direct, stories that penetrate, stories that are clear and consistent, and most importantly, stories that matter. And so I think that I'm a words guy. And so there's so many stories out there to be told. There's so many businesses that stand for amazing things. There's so many amazing business owners. There's so many great products out there that I see it as my duty and what I'm called to do. Within my work, as we're talking about those compartments, to tell that story that really matters, and not to only just tell it, but tell it creatively and innovatively, and tell it really, really well. So ultimately, that's why marketing matters to me.
Yeah, I really like that. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
Lane, if somebody wanted to find you and connect with you, how would you like them to do that?
Yeah, so personally, all my social media is Lane McCandless. So you can find me there on all socials, and I'm quick to add friends, as we've already discussed. So feel free to reach out to me on there. And then if you want to see more of the culture of the business and how we operate, you can go to robinsnestmedia.com. And we have some, there's a tab called episodes, and we do little mini episodes that you can kind of see the actual kind of attributes of our team, and you can get a good feel for the team without even really knowing them. So I'd encourage you to check that out.
Love it. And then elevator pitch for Robin's Nest. You guys create content for company, right? For companies as their content strategy. How do you put that? What words do you use around what Robin's Nest Media does?
Yep. So we're a digital marketing agency here in Branson, and really with the goal to create really high level content and strategy for companies in the area. And so something that we're able to do is we do videography, photography, graphic design, and many more services, where we're just able to deliver that to the client and hopefully elevate their business in the public eye.
Love it. And you don't just work in Branson. You have some clients outside of Branson. Reach out to Robin's Nest if you're looking for some awesome content or some digital marketing strategies.
Yeah, we're based out of Branson, but we have people all over. So feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to work with you guys.
Yes. Or if you're just looking for an excuse to go to Branson and shop at Tanger Outlet Malls, give Lane a call, and he can recommend some fun stuff to do.
That's right.
Cool. Awesome, man. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Evan. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Uplink Marketing Podcast. At Uplink Marketing, we are a team of individuals who apply our expertise in marketing and branding to help businesses make more money and look good doing it. If you'd like to learn more about how we can help your business launch a podcast, look good online, or launch a marketing campaign, head to our website, uplinkmarketing.com. If you want to know what you need to focus on next when it comes to your marketing, we encourage you to go to uplinkmarketing.com/free. We've got an assessment there. It'll take you about 10 minutes, and your business will be better because of it. And finally, thank you, Lane McCandless and Robin's Nest Media, for being a guest on today's episode.